Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And Mayor Bill de Blasio is back with us now. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Mr. Mayor, thanks for coming on again. Welcome back to WNYC.
It's a pleasure to be here, Brian.
And you did that rarest of things for a politician yesterday in your speech. We were talking about it with Ozzy. You publicly admitted a failure on your denials of co-locations to a few charter schools. You said, quote, "I didn't measure up when explaining those decisions to the people of this city." So what impression do you think you wrongly left with people, and how would you like to correct that impression today?
Well, I think it's two parts. I think, first of all, we didn't explain the criteria. You know, there were 45 co-locations proposed that were approved by the Bloomberg administration. We approved 36 of those 45 after thorough review. Now, look, the Bloomberg administration was rushing to achieve those co-locations. Obviously, that was their agenda. We did a consistent review. We found that 36 of the 45 passed muster. There were 9 that did not. We looked at the charters within those proposed co-locations. 14 of 17 charter schools were approved. 3 were not. We looked at a number of different organizations. Obviously, Success Academy was one of them. 5 of their schools were approved. 3 were not. So the fact is I didn't articulate to the public that there was a consistent review process that yielded a certain set of results, and we didn't talk about the criteria. For example, we were not going to displace special education students. That's something we thought was sacred in this process to protect the interests of kids who obviously have tremendous needs. We did not want to take them out of successful programs and lessen the ability of special ed kids to get the help they needed. We didn't want to put elementary schools into high school buildings in a dynamic that would not be appropriate to the well-being of the kids involved. So we needed to say that better. And then finally, you know, obviously we're accommodating the kids in the Success Academy school, the 194 kids that had been chosen through a lottery for that school. We're going to accommodate them in a different building. We should have said from the beginning it was our intention to keep them whole, to take care of those kids. And the emphasis in the speech yesterday, I talked about where we need to go writ large, not just about these particular co-locations or about charter schools, but the larger vision for education, fixing our neighborhood schools, et cetera. But the core point was every child matters in this equation. And I didn't articulate that clearly enough vis-a-vis those 194 students. And now we've made very clear they will be accommodated in a good space that will work for them.
Ms. Moskowitz, on the special ed kids, cites an Education Department statement from last year that her middle school would not displace any kids in the special ed program now in the building. Does this mean that the DOE made one argument under the Bloomberg administration that you reviewed and decided was false?
I think the fact is, and I said this all last year, that the previous administration had a particular game plan. And many of the co-locations were undertaken without real parental involvement, without a sense of how the co-location would affect the receiving school. And a lot of these co-locations have been very troubled for that reason. What we've said is there'll be a moratorium until we can come up with a fair system that really values the voices of parents and values the needs of the receiving school. But then we will be able to do co-locations in an appropriate manner. When we did this review, we found that in 9 of the cases, these were in some cases traditional public schools that were co-locating, in some cases charter, that in 9 of the cases, the ground rules the Bloomberg administration put in effect were just not sound. And that was partly because they were rushing and because they had a different agenda that they were trying to enforce, whether it made sense for those schools or not. So I think the bottom line is, you can do co-locations, but they have to be done in a respectful and mindful manner.
But your folks came to a different conclusion about that particular one than the Bloomberg folks, which Moskowitz says had concluded that it would not displace any special ed kids.
I think the bottom line is the Bloomberg administration was rushing, and they were willing to cut some corners. And clearly, when we looked at what it would do to these special ed kids, it was quite clear there'd be less capacity for special education, that the programming there would be undercut. And we thought that was unfair to these kids and these families in real dire need. And I think it was something the previous administration didn't weight the same way.
Mayor Bill de Blasio with us on WNYC. And let's go to the writ large question. You said in your speech yesterday, quote, "The original notion of the charter school movement was to innovate, to create laboratories for new and better ideas that then they could be brought into the whole traditional public school system. That's a positive vision that we have to reengage," unquote. So with respect to the Success Academy Network, is there something in particular to learn from them at this point? Because we know they did better than other charter schools, as well as the, you know, the average of regular public schools on last year's Common Core-based standardized tests.
I think there's something to learn from a number of charter schools, and we want to do that. I want to caution from the beginning. Some charters obviously have extraordinary resources to work with. And a lot of folks in the charter movement will tell you they understand some of what they're doing cannot be scaled up to the whole school system. And so, in effect, it's rarefied in many instances. That doesn't mean there isn't something to learn. It doesn't mean we don't value them and want to work with them. But just let's be clear. My mission is to serve 1.1 million children per year. And we have to make structural changes to do that better. I talked about yesterday a focus on early childhood education, obviously full-day pre-K for all kids, a focus on teacher retention, focus on extending the learning day with after school, a focus on systematically, strategically engaging parents in the education of their children. These are big foundational changes we have to make that literally will affect the entire school system and are part of helping 1.1 million kids. The charters at this moment, about 6% of our school system, I think it's about 75,000 kids, they're doing good work in many cases for kids. That innovative element, though, has to be brought over to the mainstream of our traditional public schools because that's where the vast majority of the kids are. And we can do that, but let's be clear. Some piece of innovation will work in the much bigger system. Others may not be as applicable if they're based on an extraordinary level of resources that obviously public schools don't get to have typically.
So since charter schools have been around for a while now, is there any example that you can cite of an innovation that might be scalable and one that isn't?
I think those that are not are those that are based on exceptional levels of resources that could never be replicated in a public sector setting. And obviously couldn't be replicated system-wide under any vision because they're based on very particular resources for very particular schools. I think what has been helpful and is one of the great positives of the charter movement is showing that if we give kids, for example, more time in the classroom setting, that we can achieve better results. That's something we want to work on system-wide. One way of doing that is with the after-school program that I proposed for middle school kids because that's going to keep a lot of kids in school up to 3 more hours with tutoring and homework help and enrichment. And that kind of model could be very, very productive. So I think some charters have proven real success with the intensity of their schedule, and that's something we can learn from.
Here's a clip of Governor Cuomo on this program the other day, supporting your right to make co-location decisions, and yet seeming to want to tie your hands with respect to charter schools. You'll hear my question about co-locations first, and then his answer. You're pressuring the mayor, from your standpoint as governor, to do something with the New York City public schools in terms of co-location?
No. No, co-location, that's up to a mayor. It's up to the mayor of the city. It's up to the mayor of Buffalo. It's up to the mayor of Albany. That's up to a mayor. I don't want to see a system statewide where charter schools can be aborted by any mayor or any city.
The governor here last week, and he went on to say he wants to make sure, as governor, the charter schools are allowed to grow and that they will not be stopped by any mayor. Would you fight him on a law that does what he says the way he said it there?
Let me frame it in terms of our vision, which is a positive vision. There's a place for charter schools in the lineup, obviously, and we value that. And once we get the co-location process right, there's going to be an opportunity for charters to continue to have new chances to grow. But let's be clear. We have to have a fair and consistent co-location process. We can't have a situation where the existing schools, the receiving schools, end up on the short end of the stick. We've got to strike a balance. We've got to make sure that charters like traditional public schools are representing the totality of kids, including English language learners and special ed kids. We've got to hold all schools, traditional or charter, to high standards of effectiveness.
So
the point is to create that kind of system means that there's going to be opportunity. Now, this notion that has been out there in a larger debate, that because we are creating what I believe is truly a more consistent and fair set of ground rules, that the charter dynamics are undercut. I don't buy that. I think the fact is that a more fair set of ground rules will benefit everybody and will push us back to the notion that charters are supposed to be helping to uplift the entire school system, 1.1 million kids. That's the vision we're working from.
Do you think the governor is interfering too much in the city's local charter school policies and that the words he used there are trying to get in the middle of your co-location decisions, by other words?
I think the notion he set forward, and I listened to that quote very carefully, was obviously the co-location decisions are local decisions, the decision of each city to make. And that's correct. We are clear about the fact, for example, that 194 kids will be accommodated. We're clear about the fact that other proposals for charters will have an opportunity to succeed under a more fair set of ground rules. So there's really a chance for everyone to move forward together. The point here is, look, I tried to say yesterday at Riverside Church, this larger education debate has been prone to disunity, misunderstanding, you know, a heated rhetoric, et cetera. I'm trying to take us back to the notion that there's actually a common vision for serving every child, every neighborhood. And in some ways, we need a more fundamental reset about what will fix our schools writ large.
Right.
If charters are agents of innovation, great. Let's make sure that's being thoroughly felt across the school system. But let's also recognize some of the biggest building blocks here. Teacher retention, retention of quality teachers, early child education, after school, extending the learning day, the role of parents. These pieces must become central to our larger strategy if we're actually going to make every neighborhood school the kind of bring it to the kind of quality level that people will know their child will be served well.
I'm glad you talk about retention, by the way. There's so much focus on making it easier to get rid of the bad teachers, which maybe needs to be done. But we have such a big problem with teachers starting out careers in the classroom and then abandoning them in the first 5 years, and it doesn't seem to get as much attention. On universal pre-K, obviously, you know, your top priority along with middle school after school. The state now seems headed toward a plan that will fund pre-K based on the number of kids enrolled and some judgment of the quality of the plan, I gather. Are you satisfied that the state is now headed toward something that will give those kids what they need starting September?
Well, look, we don't have a final budget, so I'll reserve judgment until we get to a plan. I can say I'm very hopeful. I can say I'm confident there's going to be substantial resources for pre-K and after school. We are moving intensely to have everything up and running for September. A lot of energy being expended at City Hall and at the DOE to get this done, and there's a lot of demand we're ready to meet. So I feel great about our ability to implement. I think we're going to get a solid result in Albany and be able to pull this off. Just one point on your point on retention. I thank you for framing it the way you did. I'm going to make this a personal crusade that we really focus on attracting the best teachers, continuing to train them, and keeping them in our school system. This will, there's of all the things that could affect the future of education in our city, this is one of the most central. We are losing great teachers all the time. We don't have to. And I think when we actually learn how to attract and retain the very best teachers, you're going to see a big uplift in our school system citywide, and that's a central goal of this administration.
Do you have a central policy proposal for how to retain?
Well, we know some of the building blocks. There'll be a larger articulation of a plan in the coming weeks and months, but I think the central building blocks we do know. One, respect for the profession is a huge dynamic. This was a problem in the previous administration. We're making very clear that the teachers of today are like what we used to think when you and I were growing up about astronauts. You know, the heroes of today are teachers, educators. This will frame the future of our city and our country. We're going to obviously make sure that the working environment is made more positive by giving teachers more of an opportunity to teach the way they've been trained and less focus, for example, on high-stakes standardized testing. We're going to give a supportive dynamic for good teaching by starting earlier with early child education and by extending the school day with after school. These are the kind of tools that help teachers to be more effective, ergo the profession is more gratifying because they're seeing the ability to get more things done. And when you retain one good teacher, it encourages more good teachers to stick around. So that I think there's a larger vision of how to build a teacher retention framework that will transform the school system.
On funding pre-K, or perhaps in the future anything else with a city income tax hike on $500,000 a year or more earners, the governor said something the last two times he was on that I'd like to get your reaction to. Here's a clip. He basically says that they're not the city's millionaires to tax. Listen.
There's something called the millionaire surcharge, and it's funding pre-K, not just in New York City. Because the millionaires in New York City are millionaires in New York City, but they're also the state's millionaires, Brian, right? And this is one state, and we share resources as a state.
He went out of his way to bring that up the last two times he was on. They are not the city's millionaires to tax. They're the state's millionaires, and we share resources. What's your reaction to that?
I don't see a contradiction. I agree with him that they pay taxes to New York State, and I think it's fair to ask them to pay a fair amount so the state of New York can function well and provide the services it does. And then when it comes to New York City, what I propose is a five-year surcharge. By the way, patterned on the tax increase that Michael Bloomberg proposed after 9/11, patterned on the tax increase that David Dinkins proposed to fix our public safety dynamics with Safe Street, Safe City, which was a turning point when we got our police levels up to the level that actually could start us on a road to a safe city. We've had these dynamics before where the city of New York says, look, we have a particular need. We have something we have to address. We're going to tax our own folks for a limited period of time. We're going to fix a problem, and then the tax will lapse. And the state of New York has agreed consistently. So I don't think there's a contradiction here. What I've talked about is a five-year tax surcharge so we can get full-day pre-K to become the norm in this city. Early child education really put into the DNA of this city. After school, much more extensively available, extending the school day, more learning for kids who need it. These are foundational steps to improve our school system, which, by the way, will literally frame the future of this city because education is the determinant of economic future more than ever in our history. If this city is going to compete in the world, we have to have a more educated workforce. If we're going to have more social cohesion, we have to have a more educated citizenry. So I think these are foundational investments, and to say that the city of New York needs to do this for a limited period of time, for a limited goal, is fair, appropriate, and has a lot of precedent that it's based on.
Mayor Bill de Blasio, we're almost out of time. Let's conclude with something that seemed to work well the last time you were on that I called the soft core lightning round. Remember that? You seem to like that title.
Go for it.
Which means not strictly yes or no answers, but short form rather than longer form. So other than the pre-K promise from Albany, what's the biggest thing you've been able to accomplish in office so far?
Two, simply that I think we've done something substantial in reforming stop and frisk and bringing police community together. And second, the passage of the paid sick leave bill covering now 500,000 more New Yorkers.
You named your new parks commissioner on Friday, Mitchell Silver. What's the biggest thing that would be a measure of success for you regarding parks?
Making sure that parks that right now are more neglected get more resources and can be maintained better.
Do you plan to fight for the requirement you've endorsed that the better endowed parks conservancies give a percentage of the donations they get to lower income parks?
Mitch Silver and I both said this. We're looking for a smart methodology to help parks that are less advantaged. That's one option, and we're going to talk with all the stakeholders about it.
So no commitment to fight for that particular
system.
It's
something I think is a valuable proposal, but we're looking at every possibility to get fairness for parks that aren't doing as well.
What's the biggest surprise to you so far about being mayor?
Snow. I'm a student of New York City government. I literally did not anticipate, you know, six major snowstorms in the first 7 weeks.
Is the NYPD crackdown on subway panhandling consistent with your vision of how the NYPD should treat poor people who are basically innocent of crimes?
Well, I want to reframe the question. What we're doing is where a particular precinct or a particular officer thinks there's aggressive panhandling or anything that violates the law and people's safety, that's what we're addressing. We're certainly doing it on a case-by-case basis. And it is consistent with both the notion of protecting public safety and recognizing that we're trying to build a different relationship between police and community. We've obviously done that in a very big way when it comes to stop and frisk. We have to go after the small crimes as well as the big crimes.
How does Dante like living in Gracie Mansion after Shea de Blasio in Brooklyn?
Well, we haven't gotten to Gracie yet. That's still a little ways off.
Sorry.
But we like our house in Brooklyn, and you know, Gracie will be a great experience as well.
And finally, here is a clip of your first Inner Circle comedy sketch with the City Hall Press Corps from Saturday night. This is actually you and Steve Buscemi in character as Lucky Luciano from Boardwalk Empire.
As Nucky Thompson.
I mean, Nucky Thompson. What am I saying?
Please.
Nucky Thompson from Boardwalk Empire.
I want my new czar to deal with the media from now on. Can you take that pressure?
For example, would you ever storm out of a press conference?
Well, I wouldn't be stupid enough to call one in the first place. I mean, did you ever see Lucky Luciano schedule a press conference? Arnold Rothstein ever call up the Post and say, "Hey, fellas, come on over and ask me stuff I don't want to answer." No, you schmuck.
Well, I can see we're on the same page here, Nucky.
You can get along better with the press corps after getting to pal around with them this weekend?
Oh, I actually think we've gotten along fine, and we will do, you know, very well going forward. They have a job to do, and I said that at the end of the Inner Circle. I'm a Jeffersonian Democrat. I respect that the free press is what keeps democracy functioning. But I have to tell you, the Inner Circle was a blast, and it's actually quite wonderful because everyone makes fun of themselves and each other in a kind of healthy way. And I got to tell you, the people I got to work with, like Steve Buscemi, it was just a joy.
Mayor Bill de Blasio, anything you want to say, open mic, before you go?
Well, I just want to say the goal of this administration is to fight inequality. And I think in the last few weeks, I'm thrilled to say we've made some substantial progress, particularly the bill on paid sick leave, which represents a different approach in New York City, and one that's going to really lift the wages and benefits of people who are struggling. That's what we came here to do, and we've been able to start doing that. I'm very proud of that.
Mr. Mayor, I always appreciate you coming on. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure, Brian.